I believe life is one big spiritual creative experience, and everything that we do, whether it's start a business, write a book, fall in love, or I don't know, pull a bunch of tarot cards, has a little spiritual lesson wrapped up inside of it. I'm obsessed with trying to understand the mysteries of the world, from the arcane to the mundane, and unboxing as many spiritual lessons as I can. And on the 12th house, we're going to explore all of that. So let's get into it together. Hi, welcome to the 12th House Podcast. I'm Michelle, your co-host and the head witch in charge here at Holisticism. I'm really happy to be here. And I want to talk about regret. So I've been doing these 2024 future cheat sheets at this tail end of 2023 with a whole host of wonderful clients. I do consulting and advising with intuitive businesses. And I have this series of questions that I ask clients when they come on. It's an intake form. And there's two questions that I love to read. The first question is, what's the biggest mistake that you made this last year? And the second question is, what's the best choice or best decision that you made this year? What do you want more of? And I love these two questions together. On their own, they kind of suck. Like, just asking people, what was the biggest mistake that you made, is very depressing. And we tend to like not contextualize it. And then if you just ask, well, what was the best choice you made this year? What's the best thing that happened to you? It's usually like kind of flighty, flimsy, like there's not a lot of there. But together, you know, when you ask these two questions in conjunction, it creates a world. You know, it draws a picture for you. It gives you a more holistic perspective, I think, on your choices and also kind of how you see the world, how you decide to, if you decide to have a growth mindset around things or not. So I've been working with these awesome people and I love answering and reading their questions. And I was like, oh, I should really do this for myself. It's such a good series of, you know, a reflective moment, if you will. So I was thinking about what were my biggest mistakes in 2023 and what were my best choices that I made. And a lot came up. 2023 was a very long year. At least I feel like it was. And while I was going through my own answers and kind of reflecting on this, it made me think of something called the regret minimization framework. And can I just tell you, I think that like regret has been one of the biggest themes of my life. Like it's probably intuition, art, and regret. Those you can just put that on my tombstone. So I was thinking about the regret minimization framework, which is a framework that's kind of like popularized by Jeff Bezos, but he didn't invent it. Let's be real. I'm not going to give Jeff Bezos any more credit that he doesn't deserve, but he has popularized this framework, this way of thinking that probably if you have a growth mindset, you think similarly, you just haven't been like, here's my step-by-step thinking process about decision-making. But I want to tell you a little bit about it. I want to talk a little bit about regret. And then I want to give you my actual mistakes for this last year and also the choices that were really helpful and that I want to do more of in 2024 in case it's useful to you. So the regret minimization framework is pretty simple. It's basically three steps. And the point of the regret minimization framework is to help us make choices that we're confused about, like especially big life choices. So the first step is future projection. We don't want to think 6 months in the future, year in the future. We want to think like way far down the road because our brains don't typically jump, you know, we're not long distance thinkers for the most part as human beings. We're like right now thinkers or like maybe 1 second in the future thinkers. So thinking about the far off future when you're like on your deathbed, basically, when you're super, super old or when you're talking to your great, great grandkids, what is going to be your perspective from that place, look at the decision that you're making. And what you might see is, oh my gosh, this doesn't really matter. Like, let's take an important, maybe a question that some of you are grappling with. Should I stay in my current job and continue to climb through the ranks there and make decent money and be in charge or blah, blah, blah? Or should I go bet on myself and start this project, hustle, business that really excites me? That's not at all stable. And I have no idea how it's going to turn out. Okay. So should I quit or should I go do the thing? Should I quit my job or should I not quit my job? Okay. So when you're 80 years old, you may be 95. Maybe you're like, oh, you know what? Actually, I won't care about this. Like this won't be important at all. Okay, great. Perfect. Now you don't even need to move forward with making a choice or not. Or maybe you'll be like, damn, when I look back on this in hindsight, considering my regrets, I will regret not betting on myself, or I will regret not staying at this job because it gave me the luxury to buy a house and to finish work at 5 p.m. and be around my kids and be a more present person in my own life. Okay, whatever. I don't really know you or your life and what you think you're going to regret more. That's your choice. But consider those future regrets. And most of the time, let me tell you this, most of the time people, I learned this in death doula training, and you probably have read this in a book like Die Wise, but most people regret that they didn't make a choice. Like, it's rare that we're on our deathbed and we're like, damn, I wish I hadn't gotten that tattoo on my upper thigh. Normally it's like, damn, I wish that I like had written the book that I said I wanted to write. I wish that I had gone and traveled around the world when I had the chance to do it. I wish that I had gone and like, you know, quit my job and just given myself a year to try and figure things out. I wish I'd followed the person onto the plane and told them that I loved them. You know, all the things. It's rare that we're like, I really wish that I hadn't told someone that I cared about them because it didn't work out. I really wish that I hadn't bet on myself and tried to make that thing happen. That's just not really usually how it shakes out for the most part. And then obviously next last step is going to be make the choice that minimizes your future regrets. Again, this usually means that we take risks and that we pursue opportunities that might be a little scary, that might be inconsistent or unstable, you know, unpredictable, but that you would know that you'd regret if you didn't try. And I will say that the regret minimization framework, I think people who have, like I said, a growth mindset and who have some self-trust really benefit from it. And I don't think I would have used this if I had been taught the regret minimization framework when I was in my teens and 20s, because this was not how I thought about life. And something flipped for me in my like late 20s, but really flipped for me in my 30s. And I had a completely different relationship with regret. And this is not at all my mom's fault, but growing up, my mom always said, I don't want you to make decisions that you're going to regret. And I, in my little child brain, interpreted that as, I don't want you to make mistakes. Full stop. If you make mistakes, you will have regrets. Full stop. Very black or white thinking, very childlike, right? Like, not at all my mom's fault, because I just didn't understand this concept of what she was telling me. So for a lot of my life, my decisions were not made around, well, what am I going to regret not doing, but what am I going to regret doing in the future? And that put me in the position of trying to be perfect and trying to make choices that were absolutely pure and pristine, that had no nuance. And that made me a very extreme person and made me a very anxious person. Like, I was afraid to make choices for myself because I just didn't trust myself until I was like probably 21. Like, I could not make a choice. I was so paralyzed by fear of making the wrong choice. I thought my life would be over. I thought I would want to die if I made a choice that I would regret. And it does feel like that, right? When we're in our youth, we're like, oh my God, if I embarrass myself in front of this group of people, I would dream about it 10 years later. And sometimes it does happen for me. Anyways, it wasn't until my 30s, really, late 20s, 30s, but really learned this in my 30s, that my relationship to regret changed. And honestly, it wasn't until I like was planning my wedding. I am married. My husband has brain cancer. And just, I'm telling you that to give you some context, because all of our big life decisions, I wanted to go perfectly. I wanted them to be the best, because there was this sick part of my brain, there still is, that would say, well, what if this is the last time we ever do this together? Or what if this is the last memory that we have, like the last big thing that we do together? And as we've, you know, been together for a longer period of time, that little scared voice has died down a bit, but it still pops up every now and then when we're making a choice, like going on a vacation. I'm like, is this the last vacation we're going to go on? Or when we, you know, when we got married, I was like, what if this is like the last big memory that we have together? Like, what if these pictures are the only professional pictures that I get of me and Ethan together? And when we had our baby, like, well, I mean, maybe this is the first and last time that we do this. Like, I want it to go perfectly. I want it to be perfect for him, because he's not going to get, you know, maybe he won't get to do this again. And maybe I won't get this memory with him. You know, I won't get more memories with him. I want them to be perfect. And that's a lot of pressure. Obviously, when I was talking to my therapist about it, she was like, whoa, that's insane. She didn't say that, but she did say, you know, you're going to have regrets no matter what. even if the day is perfect. And she was right. You know, I regretted the way that my makeup looked because it looked so bad. I did not look like myself. I look like a total stranger, honestly, in my wedding pictures. There were things that didn't, that now I can't even remember. It's 2 years later. And like, yeah, of course, on the day, I was like, oh, I wish that had gone differently. I wish that, you know, I'd seen this person, or I wish I'd gotten to spend a little bit more time here or whatever. I wish I'd worn different shoes. But like, it still was one of the best days of my life. Same thing with like giving birth to my son, you know? Oh my God, there's so many things that I regret about giving birth in a hospital and the care that we got. But it was still one of the best days of my life. And I'm so proud of that day. And, you know, like there's so much good that came out of it too. And learning to hold both the regret and knowing that there might be regrets and still like there's so much beauty and potential and amazingness at the same time was such a game changer for me. Really freed me to make choices and to live with more abandon and know that like, yeah, there are going to be some things I regret and that's okay. And as long as I learn from them, you know, and hopefully don't hurt other people in the process, but like I still will hurt people on accident. Like it's just how that's part of being a person, right? So I need to learn how to grow from it and to make meaning of it. That's what we do as human beings, and to not make that a waste, right? So that's my relationship to regret now. Maybe it will change. It definitely will change in the future. That's for sure. But with that, I want to talk about thinking about the regret minimization framework. I want to talk about my biggest mistakes of 2023 and my best decisions of 2023. And hopefully this will be useful to you. I'm going to share some things that are kind of personal, but also you could probably use in your business. So take it with a grain of salt. All right, let's start with the biggest mistakes. So when I look at the theme of my biggest mistakes, they usually boil down to me doing what I thought I should do to make other people happy or to like placate others, or in an attempt to empower the people around me by turning over my own power. And that's something I really want to investigate for myself in this next year of like, how can I find a little bit more balance as a manager, as a boss, as a leader, as a partner, as a parent, as a friend? How can I not be like a tyrant? I don't think that I am, or dictatorial. Those are the two things that I'm most afraid of, right? So because I'm afraid of being those things, I tend to go in the opposite direction and be very hands-off. And even when I feel like I know the answer, or I do know the answer through personal experience, I'll say, you know what? This is what I think I know, but if you want to experiment, then like, let's do this experiment together. I don't think it's going to work out, but let's see what happens. And I think sometimes that's a great perspective to have and say, you know, this is what I think I know, but I often say, but I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing to be wrong about this. So like, let's see what happens. And I like that about myself, but I also think that sometimes I turn over my power and then I get upset, or not upset. I'm just like annoyed, right? Because I'm sort of like bitter that I knew the answer and it worked out a certain way, and it worked out the way that I thought it was going to work out, which is not the way that I wanted it to work out. And if I'd just done what I thought I should do, we wouldn't be in this position. And I get frustrated at myself. So I'm thinking about like how to balance those two things of I'm not always right, and I know that, but I do have a lot of experience at this point in my life in many things. So how can I honor my own experience while working with other people and honoring what they're curious about and, you know, experimenting with all of it. So that was a big theme, placating other people, doing what I should do to make other people happy when it went against what I know in my butt and my gut. So my first thing was that I spent way too much money building a website for a podcast that we shut down a month later. One thing that I've learned in my life as a business owner and after working in tech is that it is rarely the website. And this is not to say that having a great website isn't important, but if your business isn't growing, if no one's listening to your podcast, if no one's joining your email list, if, I don't know, you're not growing on Instagram, unless you're in e-com, meaning like you sell products on a website, like specifically physical products, the problem is rarely traced back to, oh, you need to make the website better. That is like nice to have. It's nice to have a nice website, but you're not going to like put up crazy podcast numbers just by redoing your landing page for your website. It might help you maybe get one or two more guests, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important. It really isn't. It just really isn't. And I've learned that over and over and over again. And it's, I think, a common problem or answer that people who are just getting started think. Like, they're like, oh, that's this sort of scapegoat. If I just redid my website, if I just redid my branding. Now, branding can be really helpful, but branding doesn't just live on a website. And a new website, like I said, can be awesome, but that's not going to solve your problems. It's just a nice to have for the most part. So knowing this, I was trying to think of how we could grow our podcast Good For You in the beginning of last year. Actually, this was a holdover from 2022. When I went on maternity leave, we decided, okay, let's make a website for Good For You. Let's make it really nice. Let's pay someone to develop it for us. And we spent all this money having someone develop this website. A lot of money, like $5,000. And it was like literally a landing page. And then we decided to shut the podcast down and sunset it. And like literally a month later. So it was truly like flushing money down the toilet, which really sucked. And what should I have done? I mean, really, I needed to take a beat and be like, what resources actually does this need, this entity, the Good For You show, to get bigger, to grow, if that's what we want to do. And by the way, why do we want to do that? Should have asked myself that. And when we really sat down and thought about it as a team, we realized that this was an entirely separate business. Growing Good For You required resources, time, and human capital that we just didn't have. And while I loved making the show, it is so good. And Amelia did amazing and an amazing job editing it. And Wallace did an incredible job putting it together every week. It just, you know, we didn't have the bandwidth to really make it sing the way that it wanted to. And that's okay. You know, like sometimes you got to give it the old college try. We tried for a year and we decided that we weren't willing to put more effort into that or to sort of like to continue to build that out. So we shut it down. And it was an expensive mistake. Kind of sucked because it wasn't just $5,000 that we spent on a developer, but our time and money on the team to write the website, to go back and forth. It just is a really time consuming process. So that was a real bummer, but you know what? You live, you learn, you live, love. Okay. My next biggest mistake was working with sponsors who didn't pay us. And I have continued to learn this for myself, just me personally as Michelle Peloton. I like making content that I am 100% in control of. And of course, I love partnering with brands who are in alignment and especially brands that I really love, you know, that I use the tools of. But catering to someone to make content for them and to have to report back to them and to be reliant on them for their sign off on things is just not the way I really like to work. And you know, I've learned, unfortunately, that some sponsors just won't pay you for the work that you put out into the world. And that is not my bag. That's like not what I want to do. I want to make stuff that's for me and for my users. I don't really want to like be selling other people's stuff. I guess that's the long and short of it. I want to talk like freely and openly about the things that I like. And when I don't like them, talk freely and openly about them too. We did work with some really awesome sponsors like Oura Ring last year, but then I'm still waiting on a big check from a sponsor, which really sucks. But you know, that's sometimes how the cookie crumbles. Okay, my next big mistake was coming back to work before I was really ready to after going on maternity leave. And I guess maybe my mistake was planning my year, assuming that I'd come back from maternity leave and feel a certain way. And I know that maternity leave is not relatable. And like, can I just side note here? I really, really, really try not to talk about like parenthood or being a mom or whatever, because I know that like that was not interesting to me until like maybe last year. And it's also still not that interesting to me sometimes when I hear people talk about it. So I don't want to like talk about it too much because I also don't want that to be like my entire personality. But I do think it's relevant here because you can insert having a baby or going on maternity leave for like any life event, any life-changing event. It could be I'm going on a sabbatical or I'm experiencing burnout or I'm going to take care of a sick parent or a sick, you know, partner, or I'm going through a chronic illness, or I'm getting married, or I'm going through an identity change, or I'm moving to a different country. Anything really that shifts who you are and shifts your relationship in a big way to the world, how you see yourself in the world. And to be honest with you, when I went on maternity leave, leading up to it, I was like Am I going to want to come back to work? I think so. I love my job, but I don't know. Am I even going to like being a parent? I don't know. I had all these questions and I didn't know if when I came back, I would feel totally rejuvenated and excited, or if I would feel exhausted. I didn't know what kind of baby I was going to have. I didn't know how my recovery was going to be. I had a tough pregnancy and I couldn't plan for any of those things. And as an entrepreneur or as someone who has a company, I couldn't really come back and coast. I felt like I couldn't come back and coast the way that maybe I could if I was on maternity leave with somebody else's company. Like if I decided to extend my maternity leave, that meant that like a lot of people probably weren't going to get paid. And that just wasn't, you know, that wasn't a good position for me to put myself in or to put other people that rely on me in. So I didn't know what to expect. I don't know if you can predict from any big life event how you're going to feel when you come back or how you return. But I guess what I wish I had done is set myself up for more optionality, meaning that I delegated a little bit better and that I'd just been a little bit more relaxed around feeling like I might need to take a beat. I might need to take a beat and look at the business and say, huh, okay, actually, I don't want to do that. I do want to do this. I had already had classes scheduled. I already had an editorial calendar scheduled. And I noticed that when I came back, there were some things that I was really excited about. And there were other things that I was like, ugh, just really, really dreading. And that is no one's fault. You know, you live, you learn. Is that going to be the name of this episode? But I just wish that I had a little bit more time, because I did feel like I kind of jumped right back into work, even though I still eased into work. And even though the team did an amazing job, I just, you know, I noticed myself not feeling very present in some of the choices that we had to make and some of the content I had to make and, you know, some of the ways that we had to show up, even for, you know, things like sponsorships. So there was no way of telling what that was going to look like. But I guess my mistake was just thinking that if I stuck to my calendar and my plan, I would be okay. And, you know, maybe that was right. I don't really have anything to compare it to. And then my final mistake is one that I continue to make, which is not firing fast enough when I know that it's not a right fit with a contractor or an employee, or just when I'm working with someone and I just know that it's not good. So let me tell you a little story. We worked with a social media agency over 2022 leading up into, like, right before I went on maternity leave. I made two hires. One was an amazing hire and the other was not an amazing hire. My amazing hire was with Jessica, our project manager, and now our ops manager. And the not so amazing hire was this agency to take over our social media. And when I hired this agency, they are wonderful. They are a wonderful team of people. It just wasn't a good fit for our business and for what we wanted. And, you know, we did everything that we possibly could to prepare. We made a brand book. We have a giant brand book. We have a whole array of content and we give explicit, specific examples of the content that we want to see. We would sign off on content every week. And it just wasn't like hitting, you know, it wasn't hitting the way that it should. And there's this saying, you know, hire slow, fire fast. And it's so true. Gosh, it's so, so, so true. And unfortunately, I didn't fire fast enough with this agency, although they are wonderful. They just weren't a good fit for us. And I felt like going into my maternity leave, I knew that it wasn't going to be a good fit, but I just didn't want to go through the pain of not having social media for the entire time that I was on maternity leave and then having to come back to that once I got back, knowing that there are other things that were more pressing. So I just like let it ride. And wouldn't you know, maybe like the first or second month I was on leave. So I had this newborn baby. I remember I was breastfeeding and it was a holiday and I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw a post on holisticism that was so not good. It was offensive and it just was really inappropriate and not at all our brand. And it might have worked for someone else, but it did not work for us to the point where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe someone would post this. Like, this is offensive. So of course I hopped into the holisticism feed and I saw that people were like, I can't believe that you guys posted this. This is so like not appropriate. And I was so embarrassed and I was mad. Honestly, I was so mad. Here I am, like, supposed to be blissing out with my little newborn, and I'm finding something that's just, you know, I've built so hard. I spent so much time trying to build this brand that people trust and respect and relate to, and that's thoughtful and inclusive and, you know, caring. And of course, all that isn't destroyed in an Instagram post. It's like, it's not that deep, but it can feel like that when it's your business, right? So I took the post down, and I am sure I fired off a not very patient Slack message. And it was just like, that was totally the straw that broke the camel's back after a series of just like kind of the content not exactly being right and having to like make lots of notes. And again, this isn't their fault. It was just not a good fit. You know, like, I think from the jump, we both should have seen that like we probably couldn't meet the needs of each other. But it was a good reminder of like, damn, yeah, when you know it's not right, you just got to say not exactly right and time to move on. So with that, let's talk about the best decisions. And like, one of the best decisions that I made in 2023 was just hiring really awesome people to work with Holisticism. I worked with an amazing coach this year who really helped me streamline my own workflow even more, which helped me so much. And I think that they've made me a much better, it's made me a much, much better manager. And on top of that, I've gotten to work with like incredible people, you know, not only the people that I work with on the team, so keeping around great people, but we hired an amazing social media and content manager this year named KP. KP is the best. KP is also helping with Spaces. I love them so much. They're incredible. We worked with amazing consultants like The Grant. They helped us redo our Holisticism website. And I told you, you know, redoing a website isn't the be all end all, but when you do have a nice fancy website, it does feel really good. And they did an amazing job. Of course, we worked with people like Amelia, who edits this podcast, with Reg and Arby, who are on our team as administrators, with a whole host of consultants and independent contractors who helped us make content this year. Katie, who came in as our interim podcast producer after Wallace went away to get her master's degree, just like had such a fun time working with really awesome people. And one thing I will say that's really helped me this year is creating and just enforcing a 90-day contract when I first work with consultants or when I first work with an independent contractor, saying like, this is our trial period for each other, and then reassessing after that 90 days, whether it's a good fit or not. And there have been some really amazing people that I've worked with this year who we just worked together on that 90-day contract. And we thought originally maybe we'd work together for longer, but after, you know, when you're hiring for new positions, you don't always know what that position's going to look like long-term because no one's ever done it before. And sometimes what I found is we really only need that position for a short period of time. Or once we start doing it, we realize, oh, this isn't moving the needle, or the set of, the job description is actually quite different than what we originally set out and hired for. And thank goodness, because then we can just both decide together if this is a good fit to continue to move forward with the new set of, I don't know, expectations or guidelines or whatever it might be, or if it's not. And like, I would say using that 90-day contract as a trial period for both parties has been just so, so, so helpful. Okay, next best decision is cutting almost all of our meetings off of our calendar. This definitely has to do with working with this coach who helped me streamline my own workflow. And it also goes back to maternity leave and coming back too early. I noticed that I'd be on meetings, and we used to have a lot of meetings every week, even as like a non-meeting culture company. Meetings that I just would be like, I wish I was anywhere but here. And that's never how I want to feel about my business. So we just took a look at all of our meetings on the calendar, and we said, which of these can be a Slack message? Which of these can be an email? And pretty much the only recurring meetings that we have are one-on-one 30-minute meetings with each other. So I meet with all of my direct reports, so everyone who works with me. And that's it. And sometimes we only do those meetings every other week too. And it, I think, has really empowered people. I think that it saves us a lot of time, and it makes people happier. And we connect with each other in different ways. We, you know, company culture is not meeting in meetings. People really worry that if we're not meeting all the time, that we're not going to feel connected. You can feel connected in like, why don't you plan something? Like, plan an event to get together, like plan a happy hour or a tea time or some other way of like connecting that's not sort of like in the 5 minutes before an administrative meeting. That's not real team building, you know? Meetings are not team building. And I really learned that this year. I think it really helped me. My next best decision was deleting, delegating, and deferring a ton of my tasks. Just looking at and 80-20ing my own work and saying, what's the 20% of the time that I spend that really yields the 80% of the results for this business? And also just in general, like in my life, what are the 20% of the things that I do that I really love and that bring me pleasure and joy and, you know, like contribute to our life? And what are the other 80% that isn't that useful, that actually feels like degenerative in my life? And getting rid of those things or deferring those things or delegating those things, getting someone else to do them for me, paying great people to take them on so that I don't have to do them. And then finally, my last decision is a bit of a surprise, and for me at least, and that was letting myself just take more time to bring projects and ideas to life. I think that my motto for probably since I worked in tech is, okay, what's the fastest timeline we can work this, we can do this on? Because that's kind of how you're taught to work when you work in a startup, because startups are really fast and they're very lean and they're very nimble. And that's something that usually they're really proud of. So something that could traditionally take 2 months to put up, well, if you work at a startup, let's get this done in a week. I remember a startup that I worked at, we wrote a book in a month and published it in time for the holiday season. And in a normal company, that would take so much longer. And it was amazing. It was so fun and it was really hard, but it was really cool to sort of push ourselves and see what we could do. I like that. I like asking myself, well, great, what's this idea? What's the fastest timeline we could get this done on? And now my second question after asking that is, and is that necessary? What does this require? Does this actually require a little bit more of our time? I've been working on a project, a side project for a while called Spaces, that has been an idea in my brain for a really long time. And I think that we probably could have put it together in 2 months if we wanted to, but it would be a completely different product. Like if I had tried to publish this thing in April, when I probably could have, it would be so different. It would be 100% different. It would be night and day changed. And I have learned so much myself through just going through the process of sort of luxuriating and sitting in something for a little bit longer and letting it reveal itself to me. And I like process. I enjoy being in the process of anything, of making things, I guess, as an artist and a dancer and a writer and just a human being who's like always trying to develop oneself. Process is really important to me. And acknowledging that and giving myself time to process this year has been such a gift. We don't always get the opportunity to work on our own timeline. Sometimes we need to put things out into the world because we need to make money off them, right? But it's been really great to have both, to let myself take some time with a project and bring it to life, and also to have other things that I am putting out into the world in real time. So I'm going to try and offer that to myself more this year, of giving myself some more time and space whenever I can. And yeah, I think those are my best decisions of 2023 and what I want to bring into 2024, which really, when I look at it, is like being more diligent with my time and my attention and not acting out of scarcity. Tough. Easy to say, tough to do when you live in capitalism and scarcity is our currency. But I'm going to try. So that's what I've got for you. I hope that this was useful. I'd love to hear from you, like what you think your biggest mistakes were and what you learned from them, and then what your best decisions were and what you want more of in your life in 2024. So let me know and hit us up on Holisticism on Instagram. And if you want to follow along with this other project that I'm working on, Spaces, you can go to spaces.world. You can also follow the Spaces Substack. And I think that's it. And if you like this show and you are a listener, you can leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. That helps us get found by other people. And if you don't, if you're not on Apple, you can just give it 5 stars on Spotify. That also really helps. And if you're not already subscribed, go ahead and smash that subscribe button, because that again helps us, you know, get found by more people. It sort of like bumps us up in the algorithm of discovery. And we really appreciate that. And of course, if you want to share this with your friends by shooting them a text or sharing this on your stories, we'd love to see it. We'd love to repost you. And yeah, I'm really grateful that you're a listener and I appreciate you. And thank you so much. Oh, and if you really like the 12th house, you know that we have the 12th house plus, which is our paid subscriber only feed. And every month in there, we do a green room episode where I kind of like talk about things behind the scenes. So if you liked that story about firing a social media agency, boy, oh boy, are you going to like the 12th house plus, because I talk a lot more about stuff like that. And also like what supplements I like and just inside, you know, nonsense. But I also teach an audio course every month, and it's $5 a month. So it's a really affordable, accessible way to get a little bit more gas in the tank if you're an intuitive business owner or you're just trying to live a more examined life. Okay, that's all I got for you. Thanks for listening and tuning in, and I will see you on the internet. Okay, bye.
The 12th House is produced by me, Katie Dalebout, with theme music by Nathan McKay and edited by the incredible Softer Sound Studio, who you can find more information about in our show notes.